Live from New York City, it's the Gary Null Show. And now, your host, Gary Null.
Hi, everyone. I'm Gary Null. Nice to have you with us today. We're going to be exploring what black tea does for your heart. It's really good. And also, if you want to fend off blindness, saffron. And for men who want testosterone replacement, it's going to improve your liver function. Apples, avocado, and red wine can ease arthritis. And flowers help treat prostate cancer. And longer life is linked to specific foods, which we're going to discuss, in the Mediterranean diet. Now, who says this? Well, the British medical journal is telling us this. In fact, everything I've just mentioned comes from mainstream peer-reviewed scientific literature. So why aren't more people making these changes? We'll discuss that as well. A commentary from Chris Hedges from Truthdig, The Graveyard of the Elites. If time permits, we're going to also look at why we should not be honoring our war mind mentality, rushing off to wars or conflicts around the globe, because we don't have a sense of perspective. We don't turn around, and what I call living your life in reverse. In fact, it's a theme of a major lecture I did, which we're editing now as part of our self-empowerment series, where I show that only by stopping for a moment, going to a quiet place, and just taking, let's say, the last 6 months, and do this on a regular basis, and then examine the key decisions you've made. What was a part of that decision-making process? Was it emotional? Was it reactive? Was it reflective? Did it come from reason? Or was it part of your epigenetic defense mechanism? What was the outcome? If you were wrong, did you apologize? Did you learn something from it? Or did you double down and just keep doing more of the same? If we were honest as a nation with our policy leaders, we would look at Libya and Syria. We would look at Afghanistan and Iraq and all the other adventures, misadventures, and say, wow, we were wrong every single time. And look at the casualties, both ours and theirs. Look at the children that suffered. Look at the nature of our conflicts. Have we learned nothing? So, going to explore that. My guest in the second part of our program today from San Francisco is Roberto Lovato. He is an independent investigative journalist specializing in Latin American geopolitics and internal conflict and border wars and asylum seekers and U.S. incarceration of immigrants and the war on drugs and climate change. He is a former research associate at the Center for Latino Policy Studies, University of California, Berkeley. We're going to talk about the Obama-Clinton coup in Honduras, the Obama-Clinton's legacy in Central America, and the incarceration of Latino children in the United States detention centers and prisons. And that is because of Hillary Clinton. Think not? Well, I don't know why Bernie Sanders has chosen either not to use this because he's unaware of it, which is possible, but doubtful, or because he still, no matter what, has to maintain his position in power within the Democratic establishment, and the Clintons determine who is in and who is not a part of that establishment. Some exclusive, never-before-heard information about the Clintons and Obama creating the coup in Honduras, supporting it, who was behind it, how the New York Times was complicit in misreporting. And I say misreporting because they're very bright. They're not in any way uneducated at the New York Times. They have lots of talent. They have some extraordinarily skilled, insightful human beings working there. So when you completely get a story wrong, when all you do is voice the opinions of those who created the problem, it's hard for me to accept that that is just naive reporting. I've never seen anything naive about the Times. So as you see, we have a lot to share. If time permits, I'll also open it up for some comments. I want to begin by sharing some good news on exercise and longevity. There's a good report out of Copenhagen. It was the Copenhagen City Heart Study and done at the University Hospital in Copenhagen. And it says that if you jog, and they check 10,000 joggers, if you jog each week, 5 days a week, on average, you're going to live 5 years longer. That's tremendous. And by the way, there was another study of 20,000 participants that also found the same thing. In fact, it's 5.6 years for a woman, and it's 6.2 years for a man. That's a huge amount of time. Plus, you're going to be healthier because of your lower body weight, your increase in endorphin levels, the feel-good hormones, your better detoxification process by the exercise, less osteoporosis, because when you're jogging, you're forcing minerals into the tibia and the long bones. All good. Now, the same would be true if they tested it for power walking, because you're getting the same cardiovascular musculature benefits. You're actually moving 22% more muscles with power walking than you do with jogging, but you don't have the pressure upon the joints. Therefore, it's healthier. And more Americans power walk than jog. So for all of you power walking 5 days a week or jogging 5 days a week, you can expect to live nearly 6 years longer than if you didn't. Now, that's without taking all the supplements, which allow you to live longer. That's without a vegetarian diet, which allows you to live longer. So there's no reason we can't add 15 years onto a person's health. And by the way, I filmed all day yesterday in California, some wonderful material. And off to India to film, finished filming in Denmark, finished filming in Spain, and wonderful new major feature film. In fact, there's two done, finished. But I'm going to start releasing them when I come back, and they'll start being released in June. But also in June, I'm going to begin a new anti-aging protocol. Just this morning, I was meeting with a physician doing the latest stem cell research in a clinical trial with some remarkable results. And then I'm seeing some remarkable results. So I'm going to combine with the newest information, things I've never used before. And it'll be for a limited group of people. Starting in June, it's going to run 6 months, meeting every 2 weeks. So don't call now, but we'll start doing pre-interviews next week to make sure people qualify to get in. Now, black tea helps you with heart disease. Drinking just one cup of black tea every day can help you protect against cardiovascular disease. According to this study done at the University of L'Aquila in Italy, they found that black tea improves blood vessel reactivity and reduces blood pressure and arterial stiffness. And that shows a better cardiovascular profile. So that's good. And my concern is that you should use non-caffeinated tea. And what you're getting is 1 to 200 milligrams of flavonoids. And they believe that it's the flavonoids that are making the big difference. And the green tea, the black tea, the oolong tea, the red tea, they all contain flavonoids. Now, chocolate contains flavonoids, and chocolate is one of nature's most perfect foods if it's not adulterated. And grapes are one of nature's top 10 most perfect foods. So just imagine that you took some black tea and maybe had a little piece, 2 ounces of dark chocolate with it, and then had some grapes. So you're getting three different things to protect your heart. We rarely use the herb saffron. If you've ever seen saffron, it's as thin as thread, even thinner. It's closer to spider's web thickness. but it's extraordinarily beneficial. According to a major study that was done by both Italian, Spanish, and Indian, and also Sydney University in Australia, and also University of L'Aquila in Italy, they found that saffron, the spice which is commonly used by Indians, but it's been used by the Spanish as well, can help with the aging process. And normally when you have saffron, you have it as rice, and it'll give like a red quality, a light red quality to the rice, or with pilaf. It can protect against some very common forms of blindness. The researchers found that eating saffron on a daily basis helped make the delicate cells in the eye needed for vision more resilient against disease. And that's important. Now, saffron is expensive, but you don't need a lot of it. And it was specifically good against retinitis pigmentosa. And the researchers also found saffron had a beneficial effect on humans suffering age-related macular degeneration, the most common form of blindness in old age. And the scientists are now conducting additional clinical studies on macular degeneration. Quote from the Professor Bisti, saffron seems to possess a number of properties that are protective to vision. We're now trying to understand the mechanisms, but it appears to block cell death. Saffron components have strong antioxidant properties. It also appears to affect genes which regulate the fatty acid content of the cell membrane, and this makes the vision cells tougher and more resilient. End quote. Now, for men who feel that maybe they're at that point in life where they're not producing enough free testosterone and they want to get some testosterone therapy, if it's natural testosterone therapy, and you can stimulate natural testosterone with maca and with crypsin and other nutrients, ginseng is important. This is the latest, and this was at the Endocrine Society's annual meeting. A new study suggests that testosterone replacement for men with low levels of the hormone greatly improves their fatty liver disease, as well as their risk factors for cardiovascular disease and diabetes. Quote, physicians are often reluctant to prescribe testosterone for conditions not related to sexual function. However, our study shows that testosterone has a much wider therapeutic role than just for improving sexual desire and erectile function. Yeah. Why? Because so many millions of people in the United States suffer from the condition of non-alcoholic fatty liver disease, and that's a killer. And how do we get that? Drinking a lot of sodas and high fructose corn syrup, so it protects you. So that's one way of helping to protect your liver. And two final pieces. One is suffering from arthritis, which millions do. This is the latest study. This is good. Try the following. Quote, apples, avocados, oily fish, and red wine, relieving the pain in joints. Researchers carried out the study and found a definite link between the food people eat and the severity of the symptoms. In fact, apples, avocados, and red wine contain antioxidants, which reduce the rate at which cartilage breaks down, helping slow the process of osteoporosis. Likewise, oily fish like salmon are a source of the omega-3 fatty acids that oil the joints and thereby damp down inflammation. And the study shows drinking plenty of fluid, 2 to 3 liters a day, to maintain good hydration slows down joint dysfunction. And here's what worsens. Wheat, corn, rye, sugar, caffeine, yeast, dairy. Well, all right. Pork, bacon, beef, and lamb all make it worse. So there. So I'm suggesting that for a lot of people, you can drink grape juice and get 10 times the benefit of having red wine. And that's a lot easier for a lot of people. So that's good. Now, we all want to live a longer, healthier life, and the Mediterranean diet is certainly proven with thousands of studies that it will do this. And this is from the British Medical Journal, quote, "Some food groups in the Mediterranean diet are more important than others in promoting health and longer life. According to the latest study, eating more vegetables, fruits, nuts, pulses, there's your legumes like beans, olive oil, and I would add olives, and that's how you live a longer life. According to this, they also add whole grains in there. Those are called cereals, but when they say cereals, they're referring to a whole grain, not a box of sugar-coated cereal. And they suggest fish. Understandable, when people live on the Mediterranean for thousands of years, whole towns, you get used to living off the sea, also harvesting and eating seaweed, which is rarely mentioned. And a lot of the wild grasses and wild plants that grow, for example, purslane. Purslane is one of the most nutrient-dense greens that you could eat. It's delicious in a salad. It has a little sharp taste to it, and it's crunchy. It's delicious. And you can get, if it grows full-grown, you don't use the stem. But if it's small, you can use the stem also. And wonderful with lemon juice and olive oil on it as a salad. Now, for those who do not want to eat fish, and this is also true for the arthritis study I just mentioned, you can get your omega-3 fatty acids from avocados and walnuts, from flax seeds. So there are vegan sources that are just as good. So this is how you live a longer life. And this was from a professor at Harvard School of Public Health. Explains that they have surveyed over 23,000 men and women who participated in the Greek segment of the European Perspective Investigation into Cancer Nutrition. And they were followed for 8.5 years. And they found that those that stuck with the diet, the Mediterranean diet, were much healthier, lived longer. And that's great. Now, I want to take you back in time here. I was going through our archives. I wanted to find some older pieces to show you what's changed. This, for example, papers, DuPont hid chemical risk studies. This is from Associated Press, John Halprin. It says, DuPont hid studies showing the risks of a Teflon-related chemical used to line candy wrappers, pizza boxes, microwave popcorn bags, and hundreds of other food containers, according to internal company documents and a former employee. The chemical called zonal can rub off the liner and get into the food. Once in a person's body, it can break down into PFOA, that's a chemical, related to the Teflon-coated cookware. Now, why is this important? Because it's one thing for a manufacturer to create, let's say that they created this and they found that, gee whiz, they had some bad reactions. Okay, you take it off the market. But it's different when you knew in advance that what you were producing was dangerous. And then something happens in our particular type of economy that should not be accepted. It is the cost of doing business. So you figure that with your new invention, you will make a certain amount of money, but when you finally end up having to pay a fine, the fine will be a small part of the money you made. Look at Vioxx, for example. It was on the market for 4 years. It was used as a painkiller, but it killed from 60,000 to 500,000 individuals. They made $22 billion in sales. They paid, there are two estimates. The latest estimate is $9 billion. The earlier one was $5 billion. Let's just say the $9 billion, the higher one. That still left them with $11 billion in profit. That's why when the settlements were reached, the value of the stock went up and everybody got a raise. So the same thing here. So what we're looking at is companies that have malice aforethought. And I don't believe that we should be in looking at, well, we'll give them punitive damages. It doesn't bring back the dead. It doesn't take away the injuries people suffered and the trauma and the change in their lives when a loved one is no longer there. So I believe that the best choice in the future is when the changes come that we need in our society, that we take away the charter. In effect, we put them out of business permanently. Not just fire those who were responsible, because they'll just be taken over by people who are just going to be equally as greedy. Take away their charter. Bankrupt them. Let all the stockholders deservedly lose. And we should do that for every company that with malice aforethought profited when someone's health or life was taken. Those are just my thoughts. By the way, I mentioned this the other day. I'll do a little more on it today. The Pentagon, and by the way, that was in 2005. So I just want to let you know that nothing has changed in the last 11 years. That's from our archives. This is brand new. The Pentagon's war on the earth. We are waging war. We are the nation of war. We destroy. We kill. Everybody fears us. Fewer and fewer admire us. But our fighting forces and their attendant industries, which manufacture the bombs and bullets and ballistic delivery devices, also wage a war on the clean air, the clean water, and the clean soil many Americans falsely regard as protected by legislation fought for by those trying to protect our environment. Recent reports, according to Tom Hastings of Counterpunch, quote, show the following. This is just a small fraction. California, new mobile homes open for viewing in a beautiful canyon west of Los Angeles, despite the land being, quote, stained with radioactive and toxic chemical waste. New Hampshire, also they found that terrible contamination in one whole area where people are living. Kentucky, an ongoing effort to clean up a site of the uranium enrichment facility in Kentucky, and it's costing hundreds of millions of dollars, and the feds are trying to get a little bit of that back, so they got $5 million back from Lockheed Martin for its contaminated site. So Lockheed Martin, there's one of those cases, it pays $5 million, and yet it costs we the people hundreds of millions to clean up. Is Lockheed Martin in any way restricted? No. They'll just add that on, that $5 million they're paying us, to the next contract they get. Maryland, the Army is claiming immunity from its killer pollution from Fort Detrick, with the Army as defendant in a class action lawsuit claiming numerous wrongful deaths from the site where toxins, biological weapons, radiological materials, and hazardous waste contaminated the area for decades. U.S. attorney representing the Army interest asked Monday the case be dismissed. In the online court documents, Rothstein argued that the government has no particular duty to respond to hazardous substance and the Army can use its own judgment to decide whether to clean up. Isn't it time that we downsize the entire military-industrial complex and put true civilians, not these lapdog defense contractors or the Secretary of Defense or the technocrats around them, and get rid of all this? Louisiana, private contractor will burn 16 million pounds of M6 propellant, the largest burn of explosives in the history of the world, at Camp Minden next month. New York, Fort Drum is contaminated. Proposed remedies would inject other chemicals into the groundwater to try to neutralize the chlorinated volatile organic chemicals, groundwater plume. The Pentagon is relentlessly seeking immunity from federal environmental protection laws because they don't believe, even though they're the number one polluter in America, that they have any responsibility whatsoever to clean up anything they have done. And they can do that as long as we continue to believe that they are unique and exceptional. They are not. Now, next up, from the archives, thought some of these would interest you. Shame, a major reason why most medical doctors don't change their views. This is from Frank Davidoff. He says, in the 1960s, the results of a large randomized controlled study at the University Group Diabetes Program showed that virtually the only blood sugar lowering agent available at the time in pill form was associated with a significant increase in mortality, that's death, in patients who developed myocardial infarction. And here's what they found. When it came time to, you know, give up the drug, people didn't want to give up the drug. In fact, in one group, it is argued that shame is the universal dark side of this. And here's what was said. A physician said that they felt embarrassed and guilt. Shame is one of the emotions that motivate moral behavior. Current thinking suggests that shame is so devastating because it goes right to the core of a person's identity, making them feel exposed, inferior, degraded. It leads to avoidance, to silence. The enormous power of shame is apparent in the adoption of shaming by many human rights organizations as their principal lever of social change. And yet, shame receives little attention in the medical literature. One doctor at one of the major meetings said that they would not admit to their patients that they had been using an unsafe treatment because, quote, it would shame him in their eyes, meaning the doctor doesn't want the patient to realize they've made an error. Well, if doctors are so afraid of shaming, imagine being on the other side of that equation, chemotherapy that doesn't work, especially for advanced cancers in older age. But you give them, and it creates terrible conditions. You have no idea how many people I've counseled who can't eat, have no taste, have no smell. They're losing feeling in their body, chemotherapy, not the cancer. So why did they get it? Why weren't they just sent home for hospice care? Because someone could still plug a drug into that system. What if the doctor had to look at the literature? They would find that chemotherapy doesn't work in 90% of the cases. And what they call increased survival sometimes is only a matter of days or weeks. And no quality of life in that. Shame. Think about that. That was 2005. Also, 2005, beer boosts colon tumor risk. And that was from Stony Brook University. Front page of the New York Times in 2005, diabetes and its awful toll quietly emerges as a crisis, and yet the New York Times just in January said that diabetes is now 50% of all adults in the United States. I would have thought someone from the New York Times would have gone back and said, didn't we 10 years ago show that it was taking an awful toll and it was front page, it was headlines? So what has not happened in the last 10 years? How about conscious change and evolution within the medical model or the public health model? Chronic stress linked to repeated yeast infections. That was from the Karolinska Institute. So a lot of women, in particular, end up with vaginal yeast infections or rectal yeast infections, not because they're taking a lot of sugar, but because they're under stress, and stress creates cortisol, and cortisol imbalances the biochemistry and allows the proliferation of yeast. High number of cancers due to obesity. Well, we've only gotten fatter in the last 10 years. What's been done about it? This was the Nurses' Health Study. Nothing. In fact, if you're overweight, you increase your risk of colon cancer by 14%. That's a big increase. Alcohol raises HRT breast cancer risk. Any alcohol. Well, have we stopped drinking? No, we actually have increased drinking. GPs to stop prescribing antidepressants blame for suicide feelings in under 18-year-olds. Quote, this is from The Guardian, Sarah Bosley. Doctors were yesterday told to stop giving antidepressants to children and people under 18 because the risks of the pill will make them suicidal. All right, what's happened? We have had a 500% increase in kids under 18 taking the pills, and suicide in 10 to 14-year-old boys is the number one cause of death in 10 to 14-year-old boys. So we're killing thousands of kids, thousands, every year. So in the last 10 years, that was September 28, 2005, we have not learned anything. Drugs that can promote tooth decay. 600 drugs will decrease saliva in the mouth, and saliva is what helps prevent tooth decay. And as a result, we are still telling people, take your drugs, but not telling them you're going to demineralize your teeth. And this is something to think about. This is a long time ago. Quote, from Reuters. 5 years after the U.S. led an invasion of Iraq, millions of people are still deprived of clean water and medical care, the International Committee of the Red Cross said. In a sober report marking the anniversary of the 2003 start of the war, which ousted dictator Saddam Hussein and unleashed deep sectarian tensions, the humanitarian body said Iraqi hospitals lack beds, drugs, and medical staff. Some areas of the country of 27 million people have no functioning water and sanitation facilities, and the poor public water supply has forced some families to use at least one-third of their average $150 monthly income to buy clean drinking water. Quote, 5 years after the outbreak of the war in Iraq, the humanitarian situation in most of the country remains among the most critical in the world, now in worse shape than ever. A Swiss-based agency was looking at this as well, saying the same thing. All right, so what has happened? It's only worse. So everything that was bad then is worse today. There are whole days where there's no electricity. Well, how are you supposed to keep things from spoiling? You can't. What's it like when it's 120 degrees out and you have no air conditioner fans? You suffer. Especially since women there are not allowed to wear light clothing and they still have to be fully covered and fully dressed. And drugs, they don't have them. Hospitals. So you see, when you create a legacy, shouldn't you have some moral insight to say, can I turn around, live my life in reverse, and see what has my action or inaction created? I'm Gary Nall, back in a moment with our guest. Please stay with us. To welcome all of you, I'm Gary Nall, to San Francisco now, and say hello to Roberto Lovato. Nice to have you with us today, Roberto.
Glad to be with you.
I gave your bio a little earlier in the program, and I don't know if you watched the last Democratic debate between Sanders and Clinton, but Hillary's role in destabilizing Central and Latin America came up. And this comes on the heels of a recent murder of a very prominent Honduran environmental activist. And we have seen from released emails that Clinton, as Secretary of State, was explicitly supportive of the toppling of the democratically elected left-wing president of Honduras, Manuel Zelaya, by the Honduran military, in effect turning Honduras into a killing field with a resurgence of death squads. Clinton has backpedaled, as did Obama, on their involvement, and have come out against the coup. However, the evidence is clearly otherwise. Clinton's State Department planned this for a while, and a key player in this coup is an old Clinton ally, crony Lanny Davis, who happened to be Bill Clinton's attorney during the Monica Lewinsky trials, and is knee-deep in the Honduran elite community who orchestrated the ousting of Zelaya and the installation of right-wing, pro-Washington-leaning Roberto Micheletti. But before I ask you about Clinton's involvement and the alleged Lanny Davis involvement, could you provide us with the conditions in Honduras before and after the 2009 coup? And I ask you that because I have a very in-depth analysis of what it was like to live in Libya before Gaddafi was killed and then after, and people would not believe that Libya was more democratic, more supportive of the common good, and more power of the average person in thousands of little congresses around the country. No decision happened in Libya, none, that was not supported by the average person. They controlled everything, and we are completely ignorant of that. I'm going into great depth about these committees and who ran what and how it all benefited the Libyan people, but as long as you don't show the truth of something, we don't know the truth. I want you to tell us the truth about Honduras before and after the coup.
Well, I'm glad to be with you. I don't know if I'm up to the tall order of saying the truth, but I have truths that I, as a journalist, as a sometimes investigative journalist, and a person that's been to the region a lot, I think it's important, in order to understand what's happening in Honduras today and what U.S. policy has done there and what Hillary Clinton's role in that has been, you have to understand that Honduras, in its history for the, you know, since the 20th century and before, but especially the 20th century, has been a kind of the classic banana republic. In fact, that's where we get the term banana republic, is from a novel that was talking about Honduras in the 19th century. And ever since then, you know, it's been the classic backyard, quote-unquote democracy that, or dictatorship, depending on when you're talking about, of the United States. So most recently, in the late 70s, 80s, Honduras served as a kind of military base for the U.S., right, which has a, you know, major military installations like the Montorola and other military bases there that they put in when the people of Central America and Nicaragua and then El Salvador and then Honduras and Guatemala started revolutionary moves to overthrow the governments that were killing their own people by the thousands, right? In the case of Guatemala, you have 250,000 people. In the case of El Salvador, you had 80,000 people. And you had a dictator, Anastasio Somoza, who was killing thousands, too, in Nicaragua, who was overthrown. So Honduras was going to be the stop, you know, that the U.S. wanted to put in the region at the time and, you know, became an extension of not just the U.S. military, but then the culture that the U.S. military brought with it was a culture of, you know, rape, violence, and U.S. products. So, and obviously this, you know, they installed governments that were favorable to the military base and to U.S. interests. So that leads to the kind of the post-80s wars in Central America. And you see starting, you know, you have the economies of the region, in El Salvador in particular, being decimated by U.S. economic policy and wars, you know, where the U.S. would spend up to $6 billion to destroy the opposition in these countries. And then after the wars, not do anything to rebuild the countries. So that's propitious conditions for two kinds of gangsters. The gangsters that we see on television, right? The gangsters who are, you know, the young people killing each other mostly, and terrorizing a lot of the population, and the gangsters in suits, people like those in power right now in Honduras. Now, though they were put there after the government of Manuel Zelaya, as you mentioned, you know, took power in a widely recognized election, free and fair, and he was taken out in 2009. In a military coup that many Hondurans believe was staged out of the U.S. Embassy, run by the former head of the Andean region during the coup in Venezuela. So this is what, you know, this is what my sources in Honduras and in Latin America tell me, that, you know, it's some of the same people behind previous coups were, you know, I mean, you had people like, before that, people like John Negroponte, if you Google him and you look at his human rights record in Honduras, there's a lot of questions that people have about his role and his knowledge of the operations of death squads there that were trying to prevent a government like Zelaya's coming to power. So when Zelaya comes to power, you know, he starts making changes. He starts leaning towards Venezuela instead of the United States, which was happening throughout the region, right? The whole region of Latin America went against U.S. policy, you know, with some exceptions like Colombia and Mexico, where, you know, obviously you have hundreds of thousands of people killed by drug wars, including people killed by their own governments, in addition to people killed by the cartels. So Latin America turned away from this, including Honduras, and they staged the coup. And so you look at the documents that people like The Intercept, got from Hillary Clinton's emails, and it's very clear that she recommended Mr. Lanny Davis to be the go-between between the coup sponsors, the business leaders, and the same business leaders, by the way, who were allegedly linked to the death squads and to running the military that staged the coup. So Lanny Davis was to serve as the go-between between the U.S. government, and he was lobbying for there on their behalf. And what I interviewed him, and I thought I was going to have a hard time finding out who was paying his bill, and he just was upfront about these people. I was shocked. You know, he actually admitted that, he defended them. He said, there's no proof of their involvement. And everybody who's anybody in Honduras knows who's who and who's behind, the killing. So you just had Berta Cáceres, a great leader, indigenous leader, formidable organizer, environmental visionary, who had won many, many political struggles to maintain her people's land, being assassinated we don't know yet, but, it has all the fingerprints of a death squad style assassination. And, they're not even letting the witness, the main witness in there, go back to his home in Mexico. They're detaining him. And some people are actually trying to make him into the perpetrator. So these are the kinds of twisted, really unseemly characters I'm talking about the military and the death squads that the U.S. has been backing for some time and continues backing in Honduras. I mean, they were supposed to cut aid under U.S. law. You're supposed to cut aid when there's a coup. So go look at the record and you'll see the ways, the great lengths to which Hillary Clinton and the U.S. State Department went not to declare the Honduras coup a coup. And so, therefore, they had kept military aid.
Roberto, since Hillary's intent on denying her responsibility in the destruction of other nations, including the Ukraine, Libya, Paraguay, her support of the current dictator in Egypt and others, what is the evidence for her direct involvement and support for the Honduran coup and breakdown of democracy in Honduras? And in the case of Honduras, Clinton seems to align herself with the neocon Republicans, as she has done with Ukraine. And tell us what you know about Lanny Davis, more on his background. We know that he was a close friend of the Clintons. He defended Bill Clinton in the White House. Hasn't Davis also been involved in the support of other tyrannical rulers and leaders in developing countries?
Yes. Well, the way we know Hillary Clinton's involvement in the coup is, first, that Hillary Clinton tells you in her book. In her book, she admits that she was working to try to basically oust Manuel Zelaya, right? They were trying to get him back, they played it off like it was a quote moot point. That's what she said in her book. That the question of that. I'll read a quote: "A plan to restore Honduras, order in Honduras, and ensure that free and fair elections could be held quickly and legitimately, which would render the question of Zelaya moot." Right. So, I mean, she's basically admitting the plan right there. And actually, the woman that was assassinated, Berta Cáceres, is on video saying, pointing the finger at the U.S. and at Hillary Clinton for the coup. So this was pretty common knowledge. We know through her emails about her recommendations to get Davis into Honduras and to work as a consultant with them. It's an email titled, Can he help me talk with Micheletti? Micheletti was the guy who was leading the coup and who became the interim president of the coup, following the coup. So, as far as Lanny Davis, I mean, there's other emails by Thomas Shannon and others that show, they knew all along exactly who they were dealing with. They were making efforts to prevent Zelaya from ever coming back to the country or to power. And, they were really working to keep him out. So as far as Lanny Davis, he, as you said, is a long-time Clinton ally, came to power, came to prominence during the Monica Lewinsky scandal that Bill Clinton got himself into, and was the lawyer that defended Clinton. But defending Bill Clinton on Monica Lewinsky just is one small part of a long and very, some would argue, a questionable record of Lanny Davis, who, claims to be a liberal Democrat, but has helped, represent dictators like the dictator of Ivory Coast, even disagreeing with the Obama administration, which hasn't been, super great in Africa.
Roberto,
he's also represented, been a lobbyist for companies that are, selling formula that's toxic for children here in the U.S.
Roberto, I'd like to turn your attention to Clinton's involvement and support for the deportation of children who are fleeing the violence in Central America. You have visited the prisons and the detention centers in the U.S. housing many of these familyless children who are idling away in these facilities and institutions. First, explain what the Central American children are fleeing from, then summarize what you witnessed, the conditions the children live in, how long have they been incarcerated, and are they being held legally and constitutionally, or do they actually qualify according to our laws as legitimate asylum seekers?
Well, thank you for asking that question. This is an important connection that kind of came out in the debate, but not with the clarity I would have liked, because there's a direct connection between the coup and those children, right? Conditions in Honduras, in Honduras, degenerate in direct response to the coup. Things have gotten worse. The plight of workers, wages, and the general economic and political conditions in the country have become awful. And that's a great environment for gang and gang violence to grow in. So I've interviewed, young children as young as 6, 5, 7, 8, 9 in these prisons. I will not call them detention centers, because every single person in those prisons that I've interviewed, when I asked them, what is this exactly? What do you call this? Every one of them called it a prison. Okay, it has fences like a prison. There's guards like in a prison. They kind of torture people like in prisons. I mean, there's people that have tried to commit suicide, women, mothers in these jails that have tried to commit suicide because they see that as the only way out. There's documented cases of rape, psychological abuse, and more recently, even when they've let people out, the Obama administration has handed people over to, foster care homes and places that are run by human traffickers that then enslave, sexually and physically expose them to even more sexual and physical abuse. So think about what's going on in the heart of some of these children. You're fleeing the worst violence in the world in places like El Salvador and Guatemala. You cross through Mexico, where most of your mothers are raped. and you are exposed to more violence and more death. Some of your friends die in the deserts of Mexico. You know, I've been to the mass graves in Texas, in, you know, where coroners are burying some of these children and their families in plastic bags and putting them into mass graves in the corners of cemeteries in places like Falfurrias, Texas. So you have a chain of mass graves that runs from Central America, the jungles in Central America, all the way through Texas. And you arrive and you're jailed by the Obama administration after all that you've gone through. And then you're handed over when you're set free to people that enslave you and psychologically abuse. So these are the people that Hillary Clinton said should be deported, and she supports the policy of jailing. She goes back and forth, but she's on record as supporting the jailing and deportation of people that have suffered trauma, the likes of which makes for, like, the Odyssey or Dante's Inferno.
Final question for you. What charges could be placed against Obama and Hillary Clinton according to either our own national laws or broader international laws for the detainment and lack of action being taken to resolve the status of Latino children being held in limbo? And could you summarize for us the legacy of Obama and Hillary Clinton as Secretary of State in Central America as a whole?
Well, I mean, if we lived in a fair world, I've talked to lawyers who say that the legacy of Hillary Clinton and of Barack Obama in Central America and the United States, you know, beyond Hillary Clinton and Obama, would constitute war, you know, crimes against humanity or war crimes in the case of the 80s, right, before Clinton and Obama. I mean, because if you have been part of the intellectual authorship of a crime against humanity, you yourself are criminal. And so the United States was hands are entirely bloodied by the death squads that they trained and funded. So from there on, the United States has been involved with some of the most unseemly forces in the Western Hemisphere. You know, when we talk about Cuba and Nicaragua, one day in El Salvador during the war was the equivalent of all the people that Fidel Castro, Raul Castro, and Daniel Ortega have killed in their entire lifetimes. Okay, and that, because they didn't kill that many people compared to what happened in El Salvador, for example. So, you know, the United States is really, really, and therefore United States leaders are really complicit with war crimes, with crimes against humanity. And so, there's people who are starting to talk about the need for the United States to render a formal apology and start reparations, not just for the children, but for the families that suffered the war and then the destruction of their economies and the forced migration and the fragmentation of their families and their lives and their countries. So the solution and the hope in this is that there's an awareness growing about the U.S. role in the region. And those children, more than anyone, are the bearers of that message. If the United States is willing to jail, deport people that have suffered the worst violence in the Western Hemisphere, it means we've really degenerated morally, I think, and that there's the opportunity to really salvage. And like Martin Luther King said, you know, America must be reborn.
Roberto Lovato, thank you very much for all your good work. Investigative journalist, and his website is Roberto, L-O-V-A-T-O, Lovato.com. Appreciate you giving us these insights.
Okay, my pleasure.
Because we sure won't know the truth from reading the mainstream media on this. So what he's saying is that there's a whole lot of bad going on down there. I want to also share something that's rarely heard in the media, and that is, for those of you who've seen the skies filled with streaks of, you know, long ribbon streaks or long wide streaks of chemtrails, and you try to discuss chemtrails, you're told, well, they don't exist, they're not real, and yet there's an abundance of evidence that they are, including photographs from inside actual planes, people worked on those planes coming forward, but it's a message the American public just doesn't know. and yet we're all exposed to it. If they don't have a problem with spraying something, then tell us what you're spraying, what's it for, how will it impact our lives, so we know. But we're not told. But one news program did have it. It's number four on our cut list today. So let's hear what they have to say. This is an official newscast on chemtrails.
We start the new month. Claims tonight international vapor trails laid by international organizations could be filling central west skies with dangerous chemicals. Opponents of these mysterious chemtrails, which have been appearing over Dubbo and other central west centres, argue science is being perverted to change local weather patterns and keep Australia in drought.
These weirdly shaped vapour trails above Dubbo make curious patterns, but concerns tonight it could signal a systematic poisoning of the skies above western New South Wales. Jet planes often leave contrails, but these vapour trails aren't on any recognised flight paths, and they run closely parallel and cross over in gigantic X shapes, forming giant grid patterns across the sky. And it's not just Dubbo, these are happening worldwide. There's a growing belief the chemtrails, as they're known, are part of a secret international strategy to inject fine particles into the upper atmosphere to reflect sunlight back into space and prevent global warming.
This is a disgrace that our government is allowing the US to spray barium, aluminium and all sorts of toxic aerosol chemicals under the banner of repelling sunlight.
Critics equate the program to the 1950s radioactivity experiments using human guinea pigs. They're also dismissing reports of a seasonal link between a spike in the number of the sky trails and the end of the first quarter of the year.
The public deserve to know that these contrails have health implications, right? Let alone their disorganised weather patterns leading to less rainfall, much like dead paddocks with dead biology won't attract rain like a living pasture will.
And even though it's April Fool's Day, we can only hope this joke's not on us. John Ryan, Wind News.
So somewhere in the world, news media are not afraid to even bring up the subject. In our country, no one brings up the subject, and we should. Chemtrails are real, and we need to know the full truth. I'm Gary Nall. I want to thank you all for listening, and I look forward to sharing more on our next program. Have a nice day.